that after a year of abstinence from heroin that you probably could drink. And a lot of people did that. But it was like two cores of people. The people that went through the rehab and stuck with the rehab philosophy and didn't make meetings, and then the people that kind of made the meetings and studied, tried to practice what the program was saying. And another part of the literature thing was that, and I try to think of how it happened. I know a lot of times with, if we didn't have literature, we especially with the steps, I think that was important. The steps, whenever we had a step meeting, we read out of the big book, or the 12 and 12 of AA. And what we did was change the word alcohol to drugs. And whenever it mentioned that, we changed it. So I think a lot of people, when they did 12 step, or did the steps, we did it through the AA program. But we stole the, we changed the word. Right? Because like, there was no 12 and 12 for NA. And there was no written on except the one line. And you couldn't hardly do a fourth step or, off of one line. You had to have some kind of guidance. So we used this. And it was generally accepted, but there was always, like with AA, there was hardcores that didn't want to follow to the T. And in NA, there was hardcores that didn't want to touch AA. But the majority of the basis of the people just didn't care. All they wanted to do was get clean and get a better life. And so that was kind of the way it went. And I look at that, I say the service part, I think, carried me through and kept me clean because my personal life was insane. All I wanted to do was not use. And after a while, I didn't have the desire to use. And with that, anything I did, I guess, was all right, I thought that, you get into sex, I thought that was a reward of being clean. I figured, I wasted all my years with all these hang-ups and all these, and using, and I didn't, have a time to sport around. I was either in jail or getting out of jail, or once I got out, I was getting high. And getting high was all I worried about. But once I got clean, I remember Dr. Booker up at Eagleville was doing a thing, and he said, once an addict puts down the chemicals, the first thing they think about is sex. And I said, good. And I went about that, And they had things called sex contracts, It was how, as long as you were honest, you could, do what you wanted around that. You just had to be honest with the person, and they had to agree that it was all right. And, I did that, and I thought it was good. Like everything, I think the only thing that defeated me or stopped me was when I left the room. I got to a point where I was in a lot of pain, and I also set myself up, I guess that thing with property, money, property, and prestige. And I set myself up where nobody would question me. Right? Nobody, if you asked me how I was doing, I said, all right. They say, well, all right, he's all right. Or if I'm going through something, I say, I can handle it. You say, all right, well, he said he could handle it. So I didn't really have that support. And I guess part of that setup was because I was black. And it wasn't too much because of the other people, it was because of what, I guess, my own personal hang-ups around that. And what I thought, I thought it was all right. I was doing all right as long as I was doing what I was doing. And I had the hang-up where it was. I did what I didn't really, I really couldn't share with nobody that was other, nobody that was white, because they couldn't understand me. I had that little thing in the back of my mind. So it was like I never really shared intimately. I shared with my sponsor a lot of the blaring things, the obvious things I did. When I wrote my fourth step, I wrote on a lot of issues that I guess were, I had shame and guilt about. That's it said, I wrote the contents, but I didn't write about the feelings. Feelings was something that I wasn't used to share. I guess I had another pet peeve, and that was, I wanted black people to come to NA. And that was one of the things every time that I'd get an opportunity, if somebody would come around, it was like it was my personal responsibility to try to get this person to stay. And I don't know if that was ambition or what, but it started to happen a little bit. And then the other part, because I was also enjoying the I was enjoying the prestige that went with being the only black, which was a lot of prestige, and it got me a lot of sex, and got me a lot of attention, which I guess I needed or I wanted, and then it gave me freedom to go in the other areas, and I don't know, I look at it, there's no coincidences in life, I don't think. And I think the reason why I could adjust so much and stick to NA was because of my background. You know, because I came from Westchester, and when I look back at my schooling, or when I was in school, I was usually the only black person in my class, or one of the only ones, you know. So it was like, I guess it was, when I came to the rooms and it was that same equation, it was easy, it was normal, you know, and I adapted to it quickly. And I guess I also saw why other people couldn't, especially if you came, a lot of people who went through the rehab were from Philly. And they were from, you know, the environment where maybe 90% of their class, or 100% in some cases, was all black. And now you're putting them in a situation where it's the opposite, and they couldn't adjust, or they didn't think they could relate. Which was real. And but anyway, with all the stuff that I was doing, and I guess I wasn't growing internally. Externally, I was zooming. I got into an electrician thing on the same thing. It was in 77, and the union and, well, the electricians local, or most construction things in 77, had a quota system. They had to get a certain amount of minorities in their unions or lose all their government contracts. And I fell into that. You know, I think I went in, I had like 3 or 4 different qualifications, you know, to get in there. And that was, I was black, I was ex-addict, I was ex-convict. I had more X's than, I had more X's than Malcolm X, you know, or James X or something like that. So I qualified to get in there, and it was all, I guess, race motivated or race related. And I did that, and I went beyond my own expectations of what I thought I was going to get out of life. And I wasn't prepared for it. You know, I think that's what happened. Externally, somebody was telling me about the elevators of success, or the elevators of life or something like that. And I said there's 2 of them, and there's an internal one and an external one. And they're supposed to rise together. And if they don't, then one's going to be up here and the other's going to be down here. And they're going to be out of balance and something's going to happen. And that's what kind of happened to me. Mostly I wasn't ready to deal with the responsibility that came with all the stuff that I had to play with. And so I played with them all wrong. You know? And it came down to where I got into a lot of pain because I was looking at my peers at the time. They were starting to get married and have kids. And part of me wanted to get married and have kids. But the other part of me wanted to be single and have a bachelor's then. And, you know, and so it was a conflict. And when the pain came was when one woman that I had been seeing for 5 years totally rejected me. And I didn't know how to handle it, and I didn't know who to turn to. And so I was vulnerable, and I blamed the program because there was a convention in Atlantic City on the boardwalk, and I went down there, and I walked into a casino at halftime, and I fell in love. And that became my haven, you know, to deal with whatever was happening to me. When the people in the program I didn't think could understand me, when life couldn't understand me, I ran down there, and I woke up, I guess, literally after about 3 or 4 months of hanging out down there, and realized I was just as addicted to that as I was to any chemical I ever had, and that preoccupied all my time, and I started to self-destruct, and I didn't get out of it till I hit the bottom with that. And once I hit the bottom, I stopped going to meetings like in 83, and by 85 I was financially broke, and I was an emotional crippled, you know, like I was, what do you call it, unemployable, you know, because I needed all the time to gamble. And I did a geographical cure from Atlantic City and went to Las Vegas and got out there and found out that I couldn't gamble, and I was beat, and there was no defense between me and the chemical, and that's the bottom line. And when the idea came, get high, I came up with all the right rationalizations and justifications, and I picked up, and I started a road back to recovery. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I picked up and I couldn't put down. I tried, put down several times. First time I put down was like 3 weeks after I picked up. I found myself in L.A. and I went to a detox, went to a rehab, and I ran into the basic text. And I had a resentment. I had a resentment against the basic text is what it was. It was almost like, how dare them do this after I left. With that resentment, I think I lasted a week shy of a year and went back out again, and I was in 86. I went through all the things, a lot of I'd nevers. I had never slept on the street. I'd never been homeless. And I went through all that. I did all kinds of crazy things. I started the pattern of going back to jail again. And I guess finally I hit the bottom and got the humility that I needed to come back to the room. You know, I tried to come back. I started to come back in 86. And I made it. I remember I was in Westchester, and I couldn't stay there. And I remember walking, hitchhiking from Westchester to Norristown up 202. And I got to Norristown. I remember sitting down on Main Street. And I don't know, I was sitting on that little wall, if anybody knows Norristown, at the bottom of the courthouse. And I sit there all afternoon. I think I was waiting for somebody to come rescue me. When nobody came, I remember somebody in the park was drinking some wine. I ended up getting some wine with them and then started the trip again and went down Philly. And I guess I equated in my mind that Philly was the end. You know, I always looked at Philadelphia on the negative note. And I guess if I wanted to die anywhere, I wanted to die in Philadelphia. I let Philly kill me because I couldn't kill myself. So I got down there and stayed down there. And after about a year and a half, I went to meetings. And I went to the meeting on 38th and Chestnut. And I looked in, I walked in, I think I got there early, and it was like a whole bunch of chairs set up. And I was sitting there, and then people started coming in, and it was like a beginner's meeting, you know. And I guess I looked at all these black people coming in, and I'm like, well, maybe I'm in the wrong place. And the meeting started and went on, and I don't know whether I guess maybe my mind was half dazed, but I really didn't, I guess, fully get the impact of what I was seeing, you know. And I went to DRC for a while, and I started seeing that there was black people. I figured, well, maybe it was just that they're going to come in there, you know, do like an Eagleville thing, come and then go back out or go back home. And it didn't really dawn on me till like 4 months later after I went back to jail and went out, and I finally reached what I think my bottom was, surrender. Well, really my surrender was understanding that I guess I couldn't kill myself. The jail system wasn't going to accept me no more. They kind of kicked me out of jail. They told me I was doing petty crimes, right? And I had like in a year and a half period in Philadelphia, I had like four different paroles and probation. And, you know, all for petty crimes. And they just told me, you know, one judge, he's dead now, the guy. But he told me that, you know, all I was doing was hiding in the jail. I was using them for room and board. And that he wished I would stop coming, and because they need the space for criminals. And I'm like, man, you know. And then he told me, you know, go to a rehab. You know. And so, you know, that kind of like beat me up enough or gave me enough hope or whatever to get me to humble myself and come back to Norristown. So my idea was I was going to get clean. Norristown was always where I was going to come back to. I was going to get clean and get my life back together and I guess drive back into Norristown and tell everybody, yeah, I slipped, I had a rough time, but I got it back together. Yeah. But I guess I had to get humble. I had to come back as I was with nothing and I guess allow people to help me. But then, you know, I guess the reality hit me of what happened when I came down. After I was back for like 6 months, and I came down to the convention last year, and I walked in the lobby of Adams Mart, and I saw all these people, black people, you know, they're black and white, but I saw black people. And they were all clean, and I guess it hit me, it said, I guess it was kind of like that thing I heard on the Jeffersons one time, when we overcome. And I guess that's what the part that hit me is, like, I missed the miracle. I didn't stay around long enough back then. If I would have stayed maybe a little bit longer, I would have seen it happen. Yeah. And I think what made it happen was basically but to me, it's all about people getting their lives better. Yeah. And when I look at the history of AA, I look at where it came from and how it started with two professional people that were socially acceptable, right, for society as it was at the time. And I think back, well, what would have happened if it started in the Bowery or down on Skid Row? It probably would have lasted a couple weeks, or maybe not even that long, and would have died. And they would have. Now think about, what if NA would have started in the 60s out in California, and maybe Huey Newton and them started it. You know, the FBI, the CIA, and everybody else would have infiltrated it and came up with some radical organization. So it was like, you know, I think of that, and I think of, well, the higher power kind of knew what he was doing. And he started things the way they would be, not only they could kind of sneak in without really society knowing what hit them, you know. And and that's kind of what happened. You know, it started from just experiencing the Philadelphia area. Basically, NA to me really kicked off in the suburbs, and had it kicked off in Center City, it probably would have got too much of a hassle. But it kind of snuck in, and it got to where it is today. And I think I like to look at it because that's the way the higher power saw was the best way to do it. And the people that were here before me and the people that were here before I left, and I guess even me played a role in that. And I guess my greatest gratitude to my higher power in the program was that I was able to do something. I was able to be there, and I'm able to be here now. Yeah. And I don't have to leave to wait for the next miracle to happen. I can stick around and see what's going to happen. Yeah. And I guess that's a blessing beyond my wildest dreams. And it took, before I go, I'll just share with two personal. I had a brother and a sister die last summer. And one of the last conversations I had with my sister, who wasn't an addict, she had a bad heart attack like back in 85, and from 85 till she died, she kept having little heart attacks. And the last conversation I had, she was talking about my brother, who's still in his active addiction. And she couldn't understand why he wanted to try to kill himself, and he couldn't, but she wanted to live, and it seemed like she was dying. And I guess I was trying to explain to her how God gives us something, you know. He kind of gives us our own role when he gives us a chance to accept him. And I remember she died. My niece went down and found her sitting in the living room like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning on the 4th of July. And she had been at a picnic that day. And she said she died like, it looked like she had been doing that for a while, like going downstairs and having trouble, but waiting until everybody went to sleep. And then the next day, after whatever attack she was having was over, gone about the day like nothing had happened. And she was fighting for her life. She didn't want to give up life, so she was going to fight as long as she could. And the higher power got her of her understanding, chose to let us take her out of her suffering. Yeah. And then 3 months later on Memorial Day, my younger brother got killed out in California, out in San Francisco, and he got stabbed to death over a dope thing. Somebody was trying to rip him off with his dope and stabbed him. And I look at that like, I don't know, kind of, when I look and think of him, he didn't seem to me the kind of addict that would make it out in that kind of world. Because he didn't have the personality of an addict. And he was one of them late bloomers. He even started using until he was in his 30s. And so, you know, I kind of think that God kind of knew that he wasn't going to do it, but he had the, whatever, you know, he had the chemical disease, the chemical dependency or whatever it was. And he kind of relieved him of that power. And then it relates back to me. It's like from my sister, I got that thing that you got to struggle with, whatever you got, and leave it up to the higher power to kill you. You can't kill yourself. To take my own life would be, you know, that's what I'd be doing if I used the chemical. I'd be giving up. You know, I wouldn't accept, I'd be giving in to my disease. And the day, you know, from her I got the idea that, you know, she was a fighter and I want to be a fighter. And to my brother, you know, I look at back at all the times, especially in the last year and a half in Philly, where I wanted the environment to kill me. You know, I either wanted to, I used to go down Richard Allen Projects, and I was never from there, I never hung there. And I'd go down there high, or I'd go down there late at night, when everybody's shooting, stabbing, killing, ripping off, and just walk through there like I owned the place. Like I dare you to touch me. You know? And I didn't have no fear in my heart. And I look back at it, I guess after I got out of it, I'd like, you're crazy. You know? And then I go to jail and I didn't care what happened to me. You know? And I'd sleep in the subways or in the alleys and cardboard boxes. You know? And I didn't care what happened, or in abandoned houses. And it's like I wanted the environment to kill me. And God chose not to kill me. You know? And so, you know, that's the surrender. It's like if I was supposed to die in an active addiction, then I did all the footwork that it happened and it didn't. And the same way, you know. But now it's like I want to live, and I want to live it out and tough it out. And I got off track, so I'm sorry. But I don't know. The NA history is what the NA history is to the individual. Yeah. And that's the other thing that I think that we miss. We don't document ourselves so there will be accurate history. Yeah. To equate back to AA, I think all our experience comes from, if we really were open-minded enough to use what AA has to offer us, and that is its history. And it's well documented. And we can learn something maybe about documenting our own. You know, I was at an anniversary, and they had all their signing books from back in the 70s. And they had them on display. And I was looking at some of them, and I saw names of people, and, you know, little meetings with four people, and then maybe next week with five people. And, they had, you know. And it showed a whole lot just in that little thing. And I remember we had a thing in our area last year about getting rid of the signing books because they were breaking the anonymity. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, you know, I felt something was wrong. I didn't like the feeling. I didn't like that idea. And but it happened because the group conscious voted that it should be out. You know. And so now there's no NA signing books. Yeah. So it's like we don't document our history or. It's like we're living so much for the day that we forget about the responsibility of leaving something maybe for tomorrow. Yeah. And the whole thing, if you forget your history, you're bound to repeat it. You know? And I don't know. I love the program because it's the same thing that attracted me in the beginning, like the fightings in the meetings, the arguments. And but it all was for a good purpose. Yeah. And it was all because everybody had their own idea of how they were going to help the program, I hope they're something I had to get a better message, and whatever. I don't know, if it wasn't for NA, then after I did slip, I probably wouldn't have made it back, because there wouldn't have been nothing to come back to, you know. But the thoughts, and I guess the thoughts of the good times, like the only time that I could remember were the good times that I had in the room. And, you know, and that's maybe what helped me get a little more sanity, or get back to sanity enough to come back into the room, because I wanted some good times. All I was seeing was bad times coming. So, you know, that hope was alive somewhere, and all it had to do was whatever. Yeah. But anyway, I'm glad to be here, and thank you.
I'm George Amnatic. Let's see. I guess I'm going to relate a more personal story on how I got involved with NA and service work. My first NA meeting was in 77. I think it was in March, in Bucks County. It was at a Today Incorporated outpatient. They had a meeting there. It didn't last very long, and I didn't make very many meetings for the next probably the next couple years. It wasn't until I got out of rehab that I was in. People that I was hanging out with, basically I watched them all go out. We were supposed to all hang together, and as they went out one by one, I started going to meetings. I got involved. My girlfriend's therapist suggested she start a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I think that was started around 79 in Bristol on Pond Street. And before then, there was a couple meetings. There was a couple meetings that started up here and there, like in Bristol. None of them really lasted too long. Not very many people attended the meetings. But anyway, I started this meeting with my girlfriend and one other guy, and one of the goals was to get people to go. And one of the things I thought is, I remember somebody mentioned inner group. That's what it was called back then. I figured once we got in inner group, we got on their meeting list, that people would start coming. Until I started seeing where the rest of the groups were. And I know what I listened to Bobby mention, where he was the only person in the meeting for a while. I was a little creative, and one of the rehabs I had gone to, they let people go out to meetings. They just needed rides. I could fit seven people in my car, so keep my meeting going. I went to the rehab every week and picked up seven people. And we had eight people at that meeting every week. That's what you had to do to get it going. I used to call everybody, call 2 hours before the meeting started, call everybody I know, you know, ask them to come to the meeting. And it got old. Nobody wanted to go to meetings. You know, that was the reality of it. The kids only wanted to go out of rehab because they were getting out of rehab for the night. But, you know, it was... I don't know, it was something for me to do. I certainly wasn't there. I remember the first time I heard somebody say NA saved their life. I think my jaw hit my chest. That wasn't what I was there for. You know, I was there because it gave me something to do, and I was looking to meet people. And the whole concept of the rehab I went through and everything, it was completely... I listened to Dutch tonight, and he talked about people did therapy, you know. People hung tight, you know, and that's what I was looking for, is people to hang out with. I knew I needed people that were clean, and, you know, and that's why I went to meetings. Went to the area service, which was in Norristown, at the Y. Our meetings were tight. The people that went, and I'm going to stick mostly with Bucks County, but I'll get a little bit into Philadelphia because I was involved with Philadelphia. When I went to the area the first time, I went up with a carload of people. Shortly after the This was a Tuesday night meeting on Pond Street. It shortly moved to Mill Street, and there was a Saturday night meeting, which is still in existence. It's today in Marsville, Friendship Group. A friend of mine started that meeting, and then shortly after that, there was a step meeting that started. The step meeting, we used the AA 12 and 12s. We had crossed out sober, we put drug free. The only thing we couldn't get is, I don't know what the hell to put for John Barleycorn, you know. we just could never relate to that one. I always remember every time I read that, read it, it was, who the hell is John Barleycorn, you know? But anyway, we used them in the meeting, and I didn't see anything wrong with that. I listened to some people talk about the literature. I know I copied my share of literature in my day. It was hard getting literature, and a meeting wasn't official unless there was something out on the table, we did what we had to do. A lot of times the area didn't have literature. A lot of times the area couldn't get it. A lot of times it was more convenient copying it, whatever needed to be done was done. Anyway, I remember going to the area, this was back in 79. I started getting a little bit involved. But one of the things that was great, and I speak about Bucks County, is back then, there were the three carloads that went up to Norristown every month for the area. And we were half of the area. There was a group on Tuesday night, there was a group on Saturday night, and there was a group on Sunday night. And I also heard some other people mention on how tight everybody was. We did everything together. The whole meeting went out afterwards. We went to the area together. It was a little bit different. It wasn't a hell of a lot to do. But one of the things, you start getting involved with the service. When we went to the area, there was a lot of positions open. There weren't a lot of groups. I remember Thursday night traveling to Collegeville. I remember Friday night was Oxford Circle. It just wasn't, the traveling was never a thing for me. We went wherever you needed to go, that's where you went. Nobody really bitched about it or complained about it. It just was, you looked at the meeting list and that's where the meeting was that night, that's where you went. I went to Lansdale for a few meetings. I think there was maybe 12 or 14 on there. I have a list at home, I have a lot of archives and stuff. But the earliest list I have, I think, has 12 or 14, if I remember correctly. Also had the institution meetings on the meeting list. But anyway, we got involved in the area. Also with the area, I remember a couple things. One, I was elected public information officer. I remember asking people what that was, and they said, let the public know what NA was, and that's basically the job description I got. There was no pamphlet format or anything. Eventually I managed to find one, but it took me about 6 months. I got it out of Atlanta. And like I said, we did everything as a group. I remember having public information committees. That's a committee I was chairman of. I have a committee meeting once a week at my house, and I have 12 people show up. Two guys would do the newspaper, two guys would do television and radio, two guys would do schools, a couple guys were doing posters, people were involved and we did things together. We did a lot of stuff out of that one committee. Personally, I didn't do anything but chair it, but with all the people there, everybody was basically telling me what to do. And that was the toughest part, was finding out what needed to be done, because nobody, there was no literature that told you what to do. I remember going to the first regional meeting that I attended. I think that one was in Collegeville, and there were people from Scranton, Harrisburg, and the Philadelphia area. We all got together to discuss, they were discussing, one of the things was a convention that they were talking about putting together, which wound up being the first East Coast. They also talked about, it was the second regional meeting that we had. I remember somebody brought up the topic of, we wanted to know if it was all right if we used the AA 12 and 12s in our meeting. And some of us thought it was a ridiculous question. What's the problem? You know, we're having a step meeting, we need a step book, you know. And they said, no, that's AA, it's different. And, you know, a lot of people just really didn't know. But one of the things that, this is how Bucks County had got involved in the writing of the book was, and a lot of things happened like that. It was brought up. I remember the guy was from Pittsburgh. He had just came back from the World Service Conference, and we asked him, he said, no, you're not allowed to use that. And we said, well, we have a step meeting, what can we use? And he said, well, you can use NA literature. And we said, well, there's no NA literature. He said, well, if you write your own, it is. So on the way back, this one was in Harrisburg, on the way back, everybody in my car was going, well, we're going to have to start writing NA steps, you know. I said, wait a minute, I said, I don't want any parts of this, you know. I don't know much about the steps, but the enthusiasm that was there, and you know, this needed to be done. Simple. This is what we're going to do, you know. And shortly after that, I remember I asked this guy Bob from Pittsburgh. I said, you know, we're supposed to write on. I said, this is what our group wants to do. This is what we're going to be doing. And he said, well, let me give you this. This guy's the head of the World Literature Committee. Let me give you his phone number and you contact him. And that was Bo down Atlanta. So we were having our second step meeting. We're writing. What we did is we had a meeting, we taped it, and then we transcribe it. And that's what we were planning on using in our step meeting. I called him in the middle of our meeting and told him what we were doing, that we were writing NA steps, and he was the guy that was elected on the world service level for writing a book, the basic text. We called it the book back then. But I remember him saying to me over the phone, he goes, hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. I said, I think there's a preacher on the phone here, you know. And, you know, and I told him what we were doing. This was a couple weeks before the First East Coast. And he asked me if I was going to the First East Coast. And I said, yeah. And he said that he would be up there and he'd see me in 2 weeks. So he came up. And that was really the start of the Philadelphia area, Bucks County area, getting involved with the writing of the book. Like I said, there was a lot of people that were looking for stuff to do, and I remember when I met him, that's where I got a PI pamphlet on told you how to run a public information meeting. There's a lot of good stuff that you know, he had a lot of information. I was looking for somebody myself that I could pump a lot of questions into on how to do things, and he was like the, you know, first person that had a lot of answers to the questions that I had. Basically, every committee in the area that I was in, I was supposed to run or supposed to know what needed to be done, and all I knew is I had no clue what we were doing, you know. I met him at the First East Coast. We talked about what we were writing. There was another convention in a couple weeks down in South Carolina. He told me he was going there and he would have a lot more information for me about the book that's being written, the process that it was going to take, about the different pamphlets I got. He wanted me to start a literature committee, which I did in Bristol. For writing the steps and how to go about doing that. So I had a lot of handbooks telling me how to do stuff, and that's how I learned how to, you know, how to run these committees that I was part of. And like I said, at this point, there must have been in Bristol, there were 14 or 16 people that were involved pretty strongly with doing service work. In the meantime, I had always started going to the Oxford Circle meeting, and there was a bunch of people in the Northeast there. I remember a couple, Debbie and John, who had a lot of people get together at their house for various things. And we started supporting each other's areas. They would have a dance in our area. We would have one down in Yardley or trying to think on where else, Marsville. We'd have some dances. They would come bring people down from their area. We would bring people up to their area, and there was a big exchange. There was a lot of communications at that time. I started getting people's phone numbers from different states. A lot of talking on the phone, a lot of who's doing what and what's happening, and basically whatever was happening in NA, everybody that was involved tried to support it in one way or another. And I think that was something that was pretty important. There was a lot of needs, and people just couldn't help but fill the needs. You know, that's really how I saw it back then. I heard different people talk about the recovery. The recovery was service. You know, that's really what it came down to. Shortly after we met them, I went to my first literature conference, and that was in Lincoln, Nebraska. Also, my first world convention before that was in Wichita. I watched the process of the book being started, from my point of view. I also remember telling people in the area about the book, and I remember a couple people, I'm not going to say names, but yeah, we heard that for years and years. Yeah, there's going to be a book. Yeah, there's going to be this. And that was really everybody's attitude. A lot of it was California versus the rest of the country. Once they heard that it was coming out of Atlanta, the guy there was running, a lot of people were interested, just for the fact that it wasn't, propaganda out of California, in the meantime, after the Lincoln conference, there was a lot of stuff that was set into chapters and at this time now, there was a big enthusiasm in the fellowship on, everybody was talking about the book, the process that it was in. And like I said, I started, Bo had talked me into starting a literature committee in Bucks, and we used to write to different newsletters in the fellowship, the Philadelphia area, the people in the Northeast wanted to get involved, and I helped them get a committee started there. They had the book into chapters, they needed people to do work on them in between the conferences, and I think, I'm not sure which one it is, I have this stuff at home, but I think Philadelphia worked on the 8th chapter, and Bucks County worked on the 10th chapter, besides all the steps that we had wrote. And we had sent down, and that is in the How It Works chapter. But there was a lot of, this part of the country added a lot into the process of the book being written, and a lot of information written in the book was supplied by this area into that. In the meantime, I listened to Bobby talk about the server structure changing. There were so many changes and so many things going on, it was hard to keep up with all the different changes. I was somewhere around that time I got elected the regional service representative for the region, and our region at that time, Al mentioned it, it was Virginia, West Virginia, D.C., Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. I didn't have a clue that who half the people were, that represented those different areas. And that's, I remember Al said they also, some states only had 3 meetings. I remember, Larry N. was just Virginia, he had a couple meetings. I only ever saw him in any of the committees, but that guy came to, all the regional service meetings and also to our area meetings. I didn't stay involved too much longer until, I guess, my goal was is that we needed literature. We needed a book for our fellowship to be real. And we talked about how much growth would come out of that. We had the first East Coast Convention. I was also part of the second East Coast. Bobby mentioned whose name was going to get written down. The guy that chaired the second East Coast, he put his name up. I was like, you know, man, I just knew I wasn't signing nothing, you know. You had to guarantee that you would pay the freight if it didn't come off. And, you know, we had no clue a week before the convention or 2 weeks, you know, there might have been 20 people if we were lucky signed up. And then you had 300 people showed up, you know. But, you know, you're going in the hole for a few thousand up to that weekend, you know, looking for, you know, just hoping that people turn up at it. But I remember, I don't remember the date. I wasn't, I used to, like I said, I talked to a lot of people from around the country, and I got the histories on how, their area started, and, but I wasn't one to document the dates. I wasn't one to, take all the archives and save it. You know, a lot of stuff was just stuff so that I could learn from. But I remember, after the Memphis Literature Conference, that was when, the book, the first, basic text, the gray book is what we call it, was the first, binded book to come out, as a result of all that effort. And, I went to that conference, with a couple people from this area, and, after that, the book came out like a week or 2 weeks later and was sent by Greyhound from Memphis. They had it, binded down there by, some publisher or whatever. I wasn't any part of that, but it was sent by Greyhound, and I had to go, down into Philadelphia, the Greyhound terminal, to get it. And, I remember I was with my girlfriend at the time, and, boy, that is a one crummy terminal. But she's like, where the hell are you taking me? You know, we'd go back into like the bowels of the city because it was really greasy and dirty back there. And, you know, and I had a thing that, you know, said it was for me, and they gave it to me as a big box. And I couldn't wait to open it up just to see, you know, what was in there. I told her, I said, this then ain't history. I said, you know, you don't realize how, you know, the importance of this. You know, and she looked at me. She said, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And I said, no, I said, you know, people will remember this is the first time that, you know, NA Basic Text has been in Philadelphia, but that the fellowship as a whole even had anything, you know. And I still have my copy. The people that attended the conference went there. And you look through it, and, you know, a lot of it didn't make sense, but there was a lot of pride, a lot of hard work in that. And also, it gave us our own identity, you know. And to me, I think that was one of the most important things. There's so many of them now. You have the first conventions. You have the dividing of the areas and the regions. You know, it's just like the one growing phase after another. You know, they all. But after the book came out, I just remember our meetings. It seemed like every year the meetings would double. You know, how many? I think in '82. I had a list of the Philadelphia area, and like Al said, there were 60. But I remember, you know, I'll always be counting. I'll always count the growth of the area, of the meetings, my specific area in Bristol. You know, I still go to meetings today, I count how many people were in the meeting, you know. It's just a habit, you know, of seeing, you know, it was a sign of what you were doing, you know, knowing how many people are going, how many meetings there are, and watching the changes and watch it develop, you know. I don't know how much after the book for me, I started phasing out. When Bucks County area broke off of the Philadelphia area, that's about what time I got out of service. And really, as far as history goes, I think Al pretty much picked up the ball after that. And, you know, and what Al had to say about it is, you know, I really wasn't involved after that, but there was, I went to one other literature conference was in Santa Monica, and I guess that was to refine the grade book, you know, into after the grade book, I think it basically went from what would you call it, revision and revision and revision, and it's still what's it up to its eighth edition or something now, whatever it is, you know, yeah, five. It just seems like you know, they wait a couple of years, that'll change, you know. You know, that's what the process was, is, you know, it just kept reviewing it and changing it and changing it. And I was part of Santa Monica, and then there was also one at in Ivyland, that I guess that one was mostly for the stories. I think that's what that one was, right? Yeah, it was all stories. So they wanted a story section in the book, and you know, a lot of people were reading stories and calling in, and it was a real process to watch and be part of, and also to just watch the meeting list. I watched the meeting list come out, you know, today. There's not a big difference from the fall to the spring. We used to do meetings list every month, and there would be big changes on there. You know, sometimes 6 months later, you know, they would just be doubled, you know, and it was really, you know, very exciting, because, like I said, there was just so many things to do, and you know, and almost you could just watch it grow, you know, and I don't know, it's great to see all these people at the convention, and you know, and it's great to have been a part of that. That's all I have. Thanks.